Sometime later, Paul said to Barnabas, "Let's go back and visit the believers in all the towns where we preach the word of the Lord and see how they are doing." Barnabas wanted to take John, also called Mark, with them. But Paul did not think it wise to take him because he had deserted them in Pamphylia and had not continued with them in their work. They had such a sharp disagreement that they parted company. Barnabas took Mark and sailed for Cyprus. But Paul chose Silas and left, commended by the believers to the grace of the Lord. He went through Syria and Cilicia, strengthening the churches.
Immediately, Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to the other side, while he dismissed the crowd. After he had dismissed them, he went up on the mountainside by himself to pray. Later that night, he was there alone, and the boat was already a considerable distance from land, buffeted by the waves because the wind was against it. Shortly before dawn, Jesus went out to them, walking on the lake. When the disciples saw him walking on the lake, they were terrified. "It's a ghost," they said, and cried out in fear. But Jesus immediately said to them, "Take courage. It is I. Don't be afraid." "Lord, if it's you," Peter replied, "tell me to come to you on the water." "Come," he said. Then Peter got down out of the boat, walked on the water, and came towards Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid and, beginning to sink, cried out, "Lord, save me." Immediately, Jesus reached out his hand and caught him. "You of little faith," he said, "why did you doubt?" And when they climbed into the boat, the wind died down. Then those who were in the boat worshipped him, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God."
Four verses in Acts. Why? Why pick this story of all the stories that happened in the early church? Why? That's always my question whenever I come to the Bible, is like, why did you include this? Of all the things you could have said and done, why this one? So that's why I've been trying to think through this week, why? And I'm going to use two lenses, two ways of looking at this passage as my why. The first one is always, I read from my own personal perspective. I cannot separate myself from anything I do. I am a full person, embodied as I am here today. Even sometimes when I'm in different contexts and I may choose not to speak in my Southeast London drawl, or, I may choose my behavior to the setting that I'm in, I'm still me. I'm still fully me. So my context is, I'm a young black man. I say young, sorry. Oh, almost. I still see myself as a young person. I'm a young black man from Southeast London with all my life experiences. And that cannot be taken out of how I read this passage. The other one is when Jesus is asked how we should see all the commandments, he said the first one is that we love God. The second is that we love others. So that's my second lens that I use to read this passage. And the third one is a bit of a context for what is happening in Luke Acts. For me, one of the ways the writer of Luke Acts is using this story is to preach inclusion, is to say that the new Christian community, despite its differences and the historical cultural differences between those who are Jews and those who are not part of that community, needs to be able to eat together. They need to be able to have what they call table fellowship. We can't understand it quite so much now because a meal for us is a meal. But this way of being together is about sharing culture, heritage, love, everything about yourself with someone else. And you do it over food. You do it in community, not just one or two people going to the pub, but all together. And in Luke Acts, we constantly see this fight between those who think to be in, you have to do something special, and those who desperately can see the Holy Spirit working in those who are different and want them to be included in the story of God. Now, I love sitting and eating. You can see it. I'm raised in a culture where food is important. If I share cultural food with you, samosas, gâteau pimoir, which is a chili cake, if I make you bouillon, which is a soup made of fried fish, that's the sort of stuff of home and memory and love. I can't cook any of those things, but I make a mean lasagna. However, in my family, those are the things, if my mum wants to make, I'm looked after, those are the things she'll make me. My aunties will always bring them to my house if I say come. They can't come without food because we share heritage and culture. So this thing of sharing together is really important. Yet we have this moment where there is a conflict between two people who have been together most of the passages of Acts that we've been reading. And it's funny because Barnabas never has a voice. We never hear Barnabas' actual words. We hear the writer of Luke saying what Barnabas did. We hear what Paul thinks, but we don't hear from Barnabas. It's like the film Hidden Figures, the people behind the things that have happened. And do we get to hear their story? So I'll give you a quick tour of Barnabas in Acts. In Acts 4, 36 to 37, you don't have to find these verses. You can listen back to it later. On Zoom, you can find it probably on a quick app on the website there. But Acts 4, 36 to 37, Barnabas, who is, this is an important fact, is from Cyprus, the diaspora Jew from Cyprus, gives all his possessions away to the apostles, modeling an attitude of what followers should do with their possessions. He's giving all that he owns away. Not saying that you have to do that, although the church would be quite happy, but I'm not saying you should do it. In Acts 11, Barnabas goes looking for Saul, soon to be Paul. Saul, you got all the words already? Yeah. No, all the words. Listen to the thing. My own child. Oh, every time. he really wants that chocolate. It was hard. So Barnabas goes looking for Saul and brings him in to this new Gentile church, this new church of non-Jewish believers, so that he becomes a co-worker with Barnabas in this new mission. The funny thing is, everyone else who sees Saul is scared of him. All the other Christians run away. Barnabas sees something different. He doesn't see Saul's past. He sees what he might become. And this may be why it says the apostles call Barnabas the son of encouragement. Barnabas's encouragement facilitates God's call on Saul's life and sets him on his path. However, when it comes to the moment in Acts where Barnabas and Paul can't quite seem to agree on this issue with Mark. They both have a truth. They both can see an angle, but they can't agree on what to do to go forward. That is the stuff of conflict. And we have Paul's perspective. Here it is. Mark had committed an act of, and the word in the Greek, sorry, comes out as apostasy. It wasn't that he'd just left them or run away. He'd abandoned the faith. He denied God. And this may be alluding to something else that's going on in the church at the time, which is there is an argument between Paul and Peter. Sorry, Peter. There's an argument between Paul and Peter. And this little drop of nugget of information may be Acts, the writer of Acts, talking to us about the split in the church and who Paul has an issue with, because who is Peter but the person who denied Jesus three times? So we've got this little nugget of information as well. So this story might not just be about Barnabas and Paul. It might be about the church as a whole. Why is this four-verse story here? Because we need to talk about the thing we can't talk about. In families, we have splits. There's a tension that's running underneath, but nobody talks about it. Every time someone gets drunk, maybe a little bit comes out. Certainly in my family, it's taken me 20 years to unpack some stories from 40 years ago, because each time I go to a family party, a little nugget is dropped and I write it down. As a child, I used to, you know, hide in the corner while the adults were talking later at night, as they were getting louder and louder, as the wine had flowed, and you would hear the stuff of your family, the tree, the real family tree, not the one that people like to share in the light of day. But that may be what's happening, why this verse is here. So we have Paul's side of it. We have a testimony to this split between Paul and Peter in Galatians 2:13. However, Barnabas has no voice in his reasoning here. In one of the commentaries I read, it said possibly, and this is just conjecture, just thinking forward, Barnabas might have had a family relationship with Mark, and he couldn't let him go because he needed to look after him. I'm not sure. Might be, might not be. Maybe just like that relationship with Saul in the early days, Barnabas needed to mentor a troubled man again and couldn't separate looking after him and bringing him in from splitting with Paul. Whatever happens, that denial of by Mark that led to an action, which was that Paul and Barnabas, Saul at the time, he hasn't really taken his name yet. Saul and Barnabas separate. So now, you've heard that. Who is on team Paul? Oh, no one. Wow. No one's on team Paul. Who's on team Barnabas? Go for the ball. Wrong type of church, not to be honest. Okay. We've got, I had a second hand for Paul. Did we have a second hand for Paul? Who's on team Paul in this? Okay, we've got a few team Paul. You got some people on the fence. Who's on team Barnabas? Well, who's just not going to put their, who's not going to choose? Well, who's not going to choose? So hear this. It doesn't matter which team you're on, whether you prefer Paul's reasoning, or you can think about Barnabas' reasoning. What happens afterwards with their split is they both continue God's work. They're both on Team Jesus. Close, one more. He's kind of, I see it. They're both on Team Jesus. What words haven't I done now? Look down. And that, for me, is the point of this. What's the message to us as Christians now is they split, both being unable to reconcile their differences around this person who one says, I can't forgive their actions. And the other says, whatever that is, I need to look after them or bring them in or mentor them or do something. But they both continue to do the work of God. And that is to include others in God's story and end exclusion. They've split, but they're still focused on doing God's work. And that is to include all in the story of God, in our creation, to end exclusion. So as we take our own table fellowship today, so we can include communion now in this idea of table fellowship, a shared meal. It has more symbolism. We've included other things in it, but that's essentially what communion has come from, what our Eucharist is from. As we do that together today, think about how no one is turned away from God's table. And I want you to think in those moments of silence in between the Eucharistic prayers, as we come to take the bread and the wine, as we listen to the music, as we take a moment, a breath. What are those conflicts with others that we have that maybe there's a resolution for, maybe there's a recognition of another position, and maybe there's not? Maybe the only thing you can get to is a shared purpose, a shared belief that we might be trying to do the same thing in different ways. And let God open our hearts and minds to the possibility that we can still be together in conflict. And that's my prayer.